When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Okay. Hello.
Hey.
Hello, Chris Franz.
Hey, look at that. Oh, nice.
Here I am, live in living color.
You certainly are.
A much better room than either of us are in.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Nice.
Hey, we went in another room.
I know.
So this one is a vintage Gretsch from 1964. I paid a fortune for that thing. But I love it. It's the one I leave set up all the time in my music room here.
That's great.
Yeah. And it gets played regularly.
Yeah, it does. Although Tina said, I took it on stage one time and Tina said, Chris, it's not loud enough.
So, really?
Yeah. I don't know. It records very well. You know, this is what Charlie Watts from the Stones would play.
Yeah.
In those, he still plays Gretsch, but I think he updated his kit since then. But that is a Robert Rauschenberg print poster of Talking Heads Speaking in Tongues.
Oh, beautiful.
Oh, my gosh.
Signed by the artist. Yeah, really nice.
That's so funny.
That's an inspiring room.
Yeah, this is, I'm trying to stay on brand here.
You certainly are.
Yeah.
Oh, I'd say you are. Yeah.
I can look at that room all day long.
We're looking at the books, you know, like the late night, when watching all the late night hosts, now you try and see the books in the background.
Yes. Good luck reading those.
Yeah.
Those are all rock and roll books. And, well, music memoirs and, you know, artist bios and things.
All right, so you're the king of segues. Apparently, you have one yourself that's coming out.
Yes.
You have a music memoir. So, Holly, from the What Difference, we are on the What Difference Does It Make podcast. Holly, please tell us what's going on here. Who are we talking to? Who do we have?
We are welcoming drummer, Hall of Fame drummer, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame drummer, Chris Franz, from Talking Heads, from Tom Tom Club, from Compass Point All-Stars. Can I say that? Is that a band officially?
I'm not officially one of the Compass Point All-Stars, although I know them all and I have utmost respect. But I did, the Compass Point All-Stars were a bunch of guys that played on Grace Jones's records and also Joe Cocker and Gwen Guthrie. They played for a number of island artists, and I somehow got into a couple of photographs with them, so people think I was one of them, but I can't say I was because that wouldn't be fair to all of them.
Okay, I wasn't totally sure because we both of us read the book.
Yeah.
So I understood you were involved with them, I didn't realize that you didn't actually play.
There was a lot of cross-pollination there, and sometimes we did play together, but not officially.
You weren't an official Compass Point All-Star. Okay.
We did live there. But the All-Stars were a specific unit that was selected by Chris Blackwell to back up Grace Jones. Yeah. And they were like a super group. The guitarist was from England. Keyboard player was from Nigeria by way of Paris. Sly and Robbie on bass and drums were from Jamaica. And Mikey Chung on guitar. They called him Mao because he looked just like Chairman Mao. Still does, actually. Mikey Chung on guitar and Sticky Thompson on percussion. Those were the Compass Point All-Stars.
Okay, and that was a fun point in the book, and I know that we will get there. But the book is called Remain in Love, Talking Heads, Tom Tom Club, Tina.
Yeah.
Did you have to figure out what order you wanted that in?
Well, I thought about it for a while, and I figured that a lot of people who would be interested in buying my book, like browsing, it might be Talking Heads that initially gets them interested in it. I mean, I have no delusions about that. I mean, people want to read about Talking Heads, but I would say Tina is the star of the book.
That is what I found. I really found that yes, yeah. Of course, Talking Heads. If we were not talking to you and I was just a fan of rock and roll, that Tina, I thought the Talking Heads would draw me in, but Tina had the greatest impact, I think, for me.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, she's a wee powerhouse, you know. She's really something.
Well, you talk about in the book about how she did not want to be a part of the band because this was, I mean, in the 70s, I guess it was unheard of to have a female band member. And she was part, and I guess she kind of subscribed to that philosophy for a little bit.
Well, I think she probably correctly assumed that the rock and being in a rock and roll band was kind of like a guy thing. A boys club, rather, not a guy thing, a boys club. And there was a lot of, shall we say, sexism on display in those days with rock and roll bands. And Tina loved rock and roll, of course, but she said, oh, no. You guys do that. I'll be supportive in any way I can, but no, I'm not going to join the band. And I originally asked her in 1972, and it took until 1975 for her to say yes.
3 years.
Yeah. So three years of trying to be persuasive.
As an aside, what would have been her path had she not ended up joining the band?
Well, she is an excellent painter, and she had imagined that she would be a painter in New York City and showing in galleries and things. And I have no doubt she would have had great success, but I'm glad she chose to play the bass.
We are too.
But actually that's similar to yourself. Although you played the drums in high school, you gave up the drum. You left your drums in your home. I guess that was in Pittsburgh?
Pittsburgh, yes.
Okay. Uh-huh. So you left your drums at home and you're like, I'm going to the, I guess they RISD. Call it RISD. Yeah. And yes. And I'm going to be an artist. I, you know, forget the drums. Did you go to RISD and think I'm done being a musician?
I didn't think I was done being a musician, but I thought that I was going to be a painter, you know, and maybe a painter who occasionally plays some music or something. And I loved painting and I was determined that I was going to, you know, make my mark in painting and the history of art. But instead, we ended up doing it in the history of music. Music is art. I didn't have my drums for the first year. And by halfway through the second year, I was really jonesing to play. And so I asked my dad if we could drive them up to Providence from Pittsburgh, and he said yes.
Now that's support.
That is crazy because usually, I mean, you hear about the artistic lifestyle, and it's because you go into an artistic life because your parents don't understand, and you know they're not supportive of anything, and you kind of forge your own path. But throughout this book, it seems like your parents had your back, and whatever you wanted.
They seem supportive of all endeavors.
Supportive of what you wanted to do.
I was very fortunate in that respect. I know not every drummer has this has the same. Not every drummer's parents have the same generosity of spirit.
I can't think of one.
or guitar players, for that matter.
Right. Okay. You did, and actually, going to drums for a second in high school, you said you could still, in your book, you brag that you still know the cadence. You still know the march.
Oh, yeah.
Can you go ahead, bang out the cadence right now? Let's hear it.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll
just on the I'll table.
Does it have to be on a drum or just?
No, just on the table. I just want to, I'm kind of curious.
Can you hear this?
Yeah.
Like that.
Okay. Very nice.
That's pretty good.
Ad infinitum.
Yeah, of course. Did you enjoy the march? I mean, I was in marching band, the drum line as well.
You were? Good, yeah. Good. Yeah, it was really good fun.
I loved it, and I'm sure that helped you create I need to be part of a band.
You know, I still do a we didn't get to do it this year. It was virtual this year, but I lead in my neighborhood. We have a very nice library, and they have a children's parade on the 4th of July, and I lead that with a marching drum that my dad gave me when I was 12. It belonged to the U.S. Army, and he got it for me.
And you still use it?
I still use it. Oh, yeah.
That's Isn't really that lovely. I mean,
yeah.
That's amazing. Back at RISD, you hooked up with some people from Berklee School of Music, and you started a soul band. You mentioned another teachable moment was trying to learn how to drum slowly, which is actually tough. Why was it valuable for you? I mean, obviously, I mean, Take Me to the River wouldn't be the same if you couldn't drum slowly.
Yeah, yeah. That's an interesting story, which we'll get to. But yeah, I just, you know, this was a soul band, and they like to play some ballads, some what nowadays they call slow jams. And, you know, by the Shy Lights and the Delphonics and groups like that, it took me I was used to rocking out to like Beatles, Stones, Dave Clark Five, that style of music. And to play a very slow, lovely ballad was a real challenge for me. But eventually I got the feel, you know, eventually. And regarding Take Me to the River, we had been playing that song, like that's an Al Green song. And I guess the only cover we ever did, really. Al Green did it very up-tempo compared to how we recorded it. And we had been playing it up very up-tempo. But then our producer, Brian Eno, said, I think we should slow this song down and make it like, play it like as slow as you possibly can without messing up. So we tried it and sounded great that way, you know.
that was some great advice.
Yeah, it was.
Actually, you did do, I don't know if it's a photographic memory or something, but you there's a lot of detail in there, and a lot of set lists are in there. A couple covers you did were like Love Is All Around, the Trogs, and 96 Tears.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So how did you choose cover songs? I mean, you know, it's
well we love the Trogs. We also used to do down at CBGB's I Can't Control Myself by the Trogs. And we never recorded any of that. I think Take Me to the River was the only cover that we actually recorded, I think. Because after that, David said, I don't want to have hits with covers. I want to have hits with our songs. And, you know, what are you going to do?
Hey, can't blame the guy.
No, it makes total sense.
Stop making sense. Come on.
Yeah, please.
Talking with Chris Franz, the author of Remain in Love. We're having a lot of fun. We'll stop right here, and we'll be right back.
Hello, Pantheon Podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has 3 pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house, and my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out, because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once. New quick charge function, 3 customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode. Available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So, what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Welcome back to the What Difference Does It Make podcast and our chat with Chris France of Talking Heads and Tom Tom Club and more. Well, because you hit on CBGBs, you were talking about CBGBs, which you talked a lot about in the book.
Yeah.
And it created a really great, we of course, you know of the club and know, you know, somewhat of the history, but you painted a really, really full portrait of the club and those days, you know, being at that club.
Well, it had a real atmosphere. We spent a lot of time at CBGB's. You know, one of the best things Hilly did, the owner, Hilly Crystal, was if you had ever played at CBGB's, you didn't have to pay admission ever again. So it became like a place where musicians would just hang out, whether they were playing or not. It was like a real clubhouse that way. And everybody exchanged gossip, and Some bands would encourage each other and other bands would be rude to each other, you know.
That's good incentive, though.
It was a place, it was, you know, you could even get a free beer if the bartender liked you, you know. Yeah.
But, which is important then.
Yes. Yeah, everybody was broke. I made just over $100 a week, I think. That was what my day job paid me. Tina got even less because, as you know, she was a woman, and woman got less.
Yeah, what was the luck in finding, you know, a location in New York that just happened to be in an artistic area? Like, I mean, did you know at the time, like, there something is happening in this area of town? I know there was the way you found it was kind of interesting, your apartment.
Yeah. Loft. Yeah, I found it in the New York Times industrial section on Sunday, industrial real estate, which is what Tina's brother told me I should look, because he had a lot of experience with lofts. We knew it was like on the outskirts of Soho. It was sort of like in between Soho and the East Village, and it was only 3 blocks from CBGB, so we knew that was a good thing. And CBGB's was our neighborhood bar, you know.
Yeah. And you just happened to be walking around in that area, or what? I mean, did you stumble into CBGB's, or how'd you discover the club? Because it wasn't really CBGB's back then, or was it just starting?
No, it was. It was CBGB's. I had a friend living on Bond Street, which is catty corner across the Bowery from CBGB. He's a painter, and I went to visit him the first day I was in New York, and he said, you know, Chris, I know you're interested in music and stuff and bands, and there's something going on at that club across the street, CBGB. You should check it out. And I did, and that was a really good tip.
Thank you. Yeah, history being made. Who knew, right?
Yeah. Yeah, when I walked in, I thought, you know, the first night, no one was there because it was like a Wednesday night. And there was a couple of guys shooting pool in the back room. So I heard the pool balls and I walked back there and I said, going to be in any music tonight? And this guy was dressed in a silver sharkskin suit with like a purple shirt and a white tie and those big silver sort of Elvis Presley style sunglasses. Yeah. And he said to me in a very heavy Mexican accent, no, man, no music tonight, but come back on the weekend. The Ramones will be here. So I thought, oh, the Ramones, they must be a Mexican band. And
surprise. Well,
I came back on the weekend and I found out they were four guys from Forest Hills, Queens. Yeah.
Those were some great stories also. You're recounting touring with them.
Yes. Oh, fantastic. For my money, that's one of the best rock and roll tours of all time. Can you imagine today going to see Talking Heads and the Ramones? The Ramones would still close the show because nobody wants to follow the Ramones. Not even Talking Heads.
Now, that must have been interesting to you because you saw these four guys that just had this magic on stage, didn't necessarily get along off stage. There seemed to be, as you were kind of painting, there was always something going on. Johnny would say something and that would irk everyone else, or, you know, there was always some little thing. Did you make a note of that? Or like, you know, even though in your book as well, you said, you know, Talking Heads had some issues within the band, that you recognize when we're on stage, this is something special and we got to keep going. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. That's how I felt.
And your dog, who is that?
What kind of dog?
I think it's the UPS man came. You know, in these days of COVID, you get lots of deliveries.
Yeah.
Poppy, hush.
Poppy, nice.
What kind of dog is Poppy?
Poppy's a beagle. I have two beagles, Poppy and Kiki.
Oh.
And they're both very good dogs. But, they're enunciators, you know.
We welcome dogs.
Yeah. We're dog friendly. Set the scene for the creation of Psycho Killer.
Tina and I had a painting studio at the Rhode Island School of Design that we shared in a building called Car House. And we were very fortunate to get a studio in that building because the rooms were nice and the atmosphere was good. David and I had this little band called The Artistics.
Not pretentious at all.
we were a very unpretentious band. We played cover songs and we played for our friends at parties. And
was it just the two of you, by the way?
No, it was a four piece. And sometimes we had people sit in with us, but it was, we were all RISD students. Mm-hmm. And David came to our studio one day and he said, I've got this song that I've begun and I wonder if you could help me with it. And he wanted in particular the middle eight, the bridge of the song, to be in a foreign language. And Tina's mother is from France and she's fluent in French. And so I said, well, Tina, you speak French. Why don't you, write something. And she did. She just sat down right on the spot and wrote this great, like, middle eight verse in what's known as classical French. It's not slang or anything. And I wrote a couple of verses myself. I think I shouted out something after we got a few verses. I shouted out something like, we are vain and we are blind. And Tina said, yeah, and I hate people when they're not polite. And that got incorporated into the song. But the song was Psycho Killer, and it was the first song we ever wrote together. And I loved it. I thought it was so good. And to me, it sounded like kind of the Velvet Underground meets Otis Redding or something. Mm-hmm. Although David had said he wrote it to be in the spirit of Alice Cooper. Because Alice Cooper was very big at the time,
right?
With songs like Billion Dollar Babies and stuff like that. We started playing Psycho Killer with the Artistics, And we wrote a couple other originals too. And so we started adding originals to original songs to our set. We didn't have very many. We had a few. And another one was Warning Sign, mm-hmm. which is on the Talking Heads' second album. That's how that happened. And when we did that, I just thought, damn, we should do more of this. And we should move to New York and start a band.
More of the collaboration, you mean? More of the...
More songwriting. Yeah.
Is that the way you thought the Talking Heads would be? Or Talking Heads would be? Just like always collaborating together?
Yes. And to tell you the truth, that's how it was. You know, some people have this, they imagine this other kind of single bullet theory.
Right.
But it wasn't really a single bullet. It was...
Explain to us, because you mentioned Warning Sign, and in the book you also talk about that, where David almost took full credit for that song. Mm. How does a songwriting how does songwriting credit work? Once a song is recorded, is there paperwork, or how do you agree on who wrote what?
That's a good question. You know, I think when people are working together, it's a good idea to have an agreement in advance. So everybody understands what it is. But what the law says, what publishing law says, is that a song is divided into two parts, lyrics or words and melody. Now, melody doesn't mean every single instrument on the record. It means the top line melody, what the singer would sing. So legally, you know, if you write the lyrics and the melody, then it's your song. But if you're a group of people working together and somebody maybe wrote most of the lyrics, but another person came up with the title or came up with the middle eight section or just came up with some musical event that gets repeated throughout the song and becomes a signature, well, then it gets more complicated. Some bands handle it by just saying, okay, we're going to split everything four ways no matter what. And other bands fight about it.
Yeah.
Didn't you mentioned having a verbal agreement that you were going to share the writing credit.
Yes, we did have many times had verbal agreements.
Yeah.
And
ultimately it didn't work out that way.
Yes. Not always. Sometimes. The important thing was the end result and the... In the end, we made some great records together. Mm-hmm. Thank God they still sound good today. I mean, can you imagine? You spent all that time and now they sound like passé or something. It would be terrible.
I watched Stop Making Sense last night and it was thrilling. It's still thrilling to see this band. And that those songs are just, they're timeless. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Such a wonderful thing. I was going to mention about, since we're still on kind of band lyrics, this friend of yours, Michael Wayne Zeeve, he had some lyrics for you and also helped you out with something else. Can you explain his
timeline? He was another RISD student. He was visiting us in New York. He knew that we were looking for a name for our band. And we had tried out different names, you know, sort of like we'd put the letters on the bass drum head, you know, and see how it looked, say the name a few times, see how it sounded. But we hadn't settled on anything. We hadn't found the name yet. And Wayne one day said, you know, I've been reading TV Guide. and in TV Guide, they have a glossary of television technology terms. And one of the things is a talking head, which is the most boring, yet also the most informative format of broadcasting. He said, I think you should call your band Talking Heads. And I was like, that does sound good. And David thought it was good. And Tina thought it was good. And so that's what it became. And we thought it was especially good because it didn't sound like any particular type of music or even like a band at all, more like a circus act or something. And, you know, it didn't sound like a heavy metal band or a psychedelic band or a country band or something. He also, at that time, Wayne gave us the lyrics to Artists Only, the song about painting.
Oh, is that what? Okay, is that why would he give you just, he was just writing some lyrics? I don't, or was he not?
He wrote some lyrics down and he said, I think one of us, if I remember correctly, one of us said, oh, these are really good, Wayne. He said, you can have them.
Wow.
So we did, we built a song around them.
That's actually a great drum song. Is that, what is your, that's a fun one. What's your favorite Talking Heads drumming song that you like?
Maybe Once in a Lifetime, but also Life During Wartime is a lot of fun. Zimbra, for example, all I play is the bass drum and the hi-hat for the whole song.
There's a lot of that in Talking Head songs where some, like Tina plays the same beat throughout the whole song, or, you know.
It's a way to get people to dance, you know, get people up and moving.
Works. Okay, so this is a great time to stop. We will return next week as we continue our discussion with Chris Franz, the author of Remain in Love, drummer for Talking Heads, Tom Tom Club. Make sure to follow us. Go ahead, Holly. Where can they find us?
You can find us anywhere. Look into the ether on Facebook at WDDIM Podcast, on Instagram, WDDIM Podcast.
Sign up for our website at WDDIMPodcast.com. So again, until next week, this is Dave.
This is Holly.
Check you later.
Over and out.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.